Okay, let's go. We're up to the memorials policy. Page 56, recommended. Moved by Councillor Midgley and second by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this is a fantastic policy, and thank you, Mr. Donnelly. It's a really well-written report. It's really thorough, and it's great to see that we have a new memorials policy for council. It provides clear guidance, a criteria and a framework for the decision process for memorial installation, which seemed to appear a bit ad hoc previously. The report provides the details on the communication and consultation re the development of the policy. I note there was 275 total engagements, 106 responses via an online survey, and the responses equaled 83% in favour of installing memorials to individuals in public spaces. And I just wanted to add a bit to that engagement that's provided. We can really see Mr. Donnelly's expertise, I guess, in understanding community engagement and articulating the engagement. And it's really fantastic to have these skills in council that is provided to us to see that it has been a really well and thorough engagement process. So again on that, so we can know that the policy has been informed by the community engagement process and it looks to be reflective of the outcomes of the engagement activity that's outlined in the policy. The recommendation is to endorse the memorials policy and adopt for a period of 4 years, and I hope that councillors will support this really clear framework that's presented before us for a really important and significant matter for many members of the community.
Councillor Fox, then Councillor Reid.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's a good idea that we formalise this because it's a very emotive issue for many people in our community. And there are benefits to having it formalised. I do have a concern, though, and that is that there ought to be a timely removal clause. At the moment, the policy talks about remove that council has the right to remove the memorial if the cost of maintenance goes up too much. And there isn't a sunset clause, and I would like to see a sunset clause or a time limit unless the memorial is renewed and actively allowed to remain longer. I think there should be a sunset clause. I noticed in the Botanical Gardens there is a 5-year limit to how long you can have a memorial there, and I think that's the sort of thing we should be considering rather than having something there that may well be obsolete after members of the family have moved out of the area, for example, or that the particular piece has worn out and is no longer relevant. There are lots of reasons why it's important not to have something there forever. And I just, even existing memorials that we have, they seem to be there forever. And not everybody wants them. They put up with them for a certain amount of time. And I think that should also be considered in this report. And I would like to ask staff if they have considered a sunset clause.
Mr. Donnelly.
Through you, Matt. Thank you, Councillor Fox, for your question. Yes, we have considered sunset clause as part of the policy. Sunset clauses are used by other organisations in relation to their policies, some of which have been reviewed as part of the policy development process. However, the community feedback received was such that there was no clear desire amongst the community members who provided feedback and responded to the engagement for a sunset clause or a similar outcome. I take on board your comments regarding the reasons why we would give that consideration, and one of those is potential for visual clutter in the landscape, and that's one of the major issues and concerns driving the development of this policy. However, the policy's been developed in such a way and drafted using language that will give council officers, which in this case will be myself and any others as appropriate, the opportunity to make that determination on a case-by-case basis, given and taking into consideration Kingborough's unique conditions. And having said that, the unique conditions that vary throughout the municipality. So a memorial in context at Kingston Beach would be considered within a different context to a memorial at Snug Beach, for example. So the potential for visual clutter at those two locations is going to be different and taken into consideration. So if it is determined going forward that visual clutter is becoming an issue, the policy does allow us to move to rectify that. But the feedback that we have been given from the community strongly suggests that we would engage with the relevant next of kin and bereaved to communicate with them, provide them with details of our intention to remove a memorial, for example, and then move forward from that point.
Next I had Councillor Reet, whose light's now off, and so then I had Councillor Bastone and Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I have a question, Mr. Donnelly, about on page 59, 5.7, applications for memorials should be made not less than 12 months from the date of death or event of the memorial subject. I was just wondering why this is in there. That's my first question, sorry.
Mr. Donnelly.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Bastone. The intention there is to remove any overwhelming subjective and emotional influence on an application. So by implementing a 12-month waiting period, I suppose, for lack of a better description, what that means is we can be confident that next of kin and bereaved have given full and proper consideration to their request and are not currently experiencing or within the core stages of the grieving process.
Thank you. Can I just suggest that as people get older, it, quite often one elderly person will die and the other one will die well within the next 12 months, and it might be something that eases their mind that they have got a memorial done to their husband or to their wife or whatever. So are you willing to... Is there flexibility on it?
Through you, Mayor. I think the short answer to your question, Councillor Bastone, is that yes, the policy does allow council officers the flexibility to make that determination. We'd need, though, to request further information from the applicant as to why that might be the case in this particular circumstance, and then a decision would be taken on balance. And it would also be taken in relation to the site of the proposed memorial.
Thank you. And I just have a... On page 53, I sort of have a bit of concern about you using the words associated with the act of burial, in brackets, disposal. I just find that a little bit harsh. Sorry. As someone getting older towards needing
disposal.
To be disposed of.
Take that as a comment. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to sincerely thank Mr. Donnelly and Mr. Smead as the authoriser and Mr. Donnelly as the author of what is a very sensitive and thoughtful report, and I think a really good policy that will hopefully stand the test of time, but at the very least certainly set us in good stead to formalise this process around what is a quite understandably really emotive and difficult time for so many people, and to be able to in some sense, well, memorialise but also celebrate the incredible contributions of so many of our residents and people who have contributed so much to our municipality, I think is a wonderful thing. I want to draw particular attention to 5.11, and the reason that I draw our attention to this clause, which I'll read in a second, is that as I was reading through the report and the policy, initially the thing that came to my mind was the importance of having respect to the sense of place and recognition that these that memorials are, in a way, what's so powerful about them is that is they're in a sense a gift to the community that we all share and we all see and we all remember and we all have moments of quiet contemplation in in association with the memorials that we see. So that clause to which I refer says memorial infrastructure, including but not limited to items listed at 6.3, must complement and enhance amenity of the area within which the memorial is installed and demonstrate sensitivity to the relevant site characteristics, including landscape and ecological values or built forms, including significant or historical facades, and be in accordance with any relevant desired characteristics for any area where a memorial is proposed to be installed. What's so, I think, well considered about this is that we can implement this policy knowing well that there is sensitivity to the different landscapes, the natural and cultural values of different areas, and it recognises that every memorial in its own way is very much a unique individual by individual thing that needs to be ascertained and dealt with sensitively. And so I like that there was, as we heard in the commentary just then from Mr. Donnelly, there is an awareness within the policy, built within the policy, embedded into the policy, that allows for different memorials for different places. So I think it's really well put together, well constructed, and I thank Mr. Donnelly for the work that went into it.
Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
No.
Okay, the motion as moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova, that the Memorials Policy 4.17 as attached to this report be endorsed and adopted for a period of 4 years. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. At this point, I need to say that I neglected to say Councillor Street left the meeting at 8:39pm and returned at 8:40pm. And the other thing I forgot to say is that Councillor Grace actually left at 8:25pm and isn't returning. He's been a bit unwell lately. And so we move on to the Transform Kingston project. There's a recommended motion on, you can hear, I'm firing up now, page 67. There's a recommended motion. Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you to staff for the report, which is a good one. This is the next stage in what's a very exciting project. The work program, as far as I can tell, is very well put together and provides an appropriate timeline for the works, and I look forward to them continuing as planned.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I thank for this thorough and detailed plan and update providing information and timelines regarding the implementation of this very important project happening very soon. I'm sure soon we'll be implementing and confirming the project officer for this, which has a very wide and varied job ahead of them. As we can see, it provides timeline deliverable for planning, bike plan, public transport activation, economic and social development, increasing investment, public infrastructure, main street upgrades, streetscape and public space improvements, active transport connections, vehicular access and parking, just to name a few. I think in 5 to 10 years, Kingston will not be what it is today, and that is very exciting that we will have something fantastic to see. It's got so many of my favourite topics about living and shopping locally, encouraging public transport, active transport, upgrading areas so that we can do this, more vegetation, enhancing the public realm and encouraging local jobs and activation. I just had a couple of questions as I went through the timeline and the very detailed report. I could not see anything in regards to what action we're taking around discussions around express bus services. I'm just wondering at all, it's not detailed in there, and I'm wondering at all when we'll be having conversations about that. Will it be included? I just missed it.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through you, Mayor, the express bus services will probably initially be focused on the Huntingfield Park and Ride. That's not really part of the Transform Kingston project, even though everything's complementing and everything's interrelated. But we're certainly having conversations with State Growth and Metro in that regard. The park and ride facility is planned to be constructed this summer, and we're having some further conversations, in fact, with Metro in the coming week. about the bus services which will be provided from there, and we're also having conversations with Metro and with State Growth in relation to the bus services which will be provided to the Kingston CBD.
Thank you. Another point is the Child and Family Centre in Kingston with the Mayor. I did attend the Child and Family Centre discussion there, and it was definite significant kind of missing links, I guess, in regards to the walkway and safe walkway and active transport links to the new Child and Family Centre. I'm just wondering at all if we're having any conversations around that, because the Mayor did present this project, but there seems to be not quite enough funds to kind of reach that far.
Through the Chair, yeah, certainly this project is, in terms of the actual next 2.5 to 3 years, focusing on the main street. It's not proposing to do all the work which is proposed within the place strategy, bearing in mind the place strategy is a 20 to 30 year program. So there'll be plenty of work to be done in future years. So the focus here is on the main street and some of the arteries which flow from that. In regard to the child care centre, we're certainly aware of that, and it will be incorporated within the broader ambit of the project. And we will endeavour to make sure that as it's built, and I'm not sure when it is going to be built, but when it is built, that it will be linked into the pedestrian ways and other infrastructure which will be part of this project.
Thank you, that's good to hear. I think it's approximately 2 years. A point from page 64, where it states in the Kingborough Bike Plan, there's a point that it says other active transport construction, e.g. footpath upgrades. It would be great to make note, due to the recent motion that was passed in regards to separated bike lanes. No, that's just a point there. And another point, just in regards to, I couldn't see anywhere, and again it could be part of the broader project, but I still feel like it does definitely have implications, especially with the vision around getting people out of their cars and onto buses and active transport links and things like that. And we know that some of the barriers are to catch a bus in the pouring rain or the sunny day or whatever, too sunny, you don't want to, you know, stand there without a bus shelter. So I'm wondering, there is no kind of noting there, and I know that that's not council's responsibility, but do we have a time frame and any discussion in regards to the audit of the bus shelters? I think it was DSG or government or someone, because I think that that has an impact on this, but I didn't note that anywhere either in the time frame.
Mr. Ferrier.
The bus stop audit is separate to this. It's a project which State Growth are managing. Obviously, there'll be connections in relation to this project, and we're working with State Growth on a coordinated rollout of both their projects and our project. But the bus stop audit is very much a State Growth-led process, and it's looking at all the bus stops in the municipality, not just within the centre of Kingborough.
Thank you. And just another point, but I can't find it. I've written 3.2.3. Basically, it was making a note around child-friendly areas and also pet-friendly spaces, and it's fantastic to see that the project scope is broad, and Yarn Gell, who's a city planner and urban visionary, says, if you see a city with many children and many old people using the city's public spaces, it's a sign that it's a good quality place for people. So, I look forward to this and look forward to be kept up to date with what happens and the appointment of the project manager for this.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions. The first question, apologies if I've missed it, but I am asking about the visibility back to councillors and the reporting mechanisms as this terrific plan goes ahead. What kind of workshops and ongoing, will there be like a quarterly report that we can expect, those kinds of things?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the Chair, they probably haven't figured that out entirely. That'll be part of the stakeholder engagement strategy. We've been working with Sarah Wilcox on that, and as we flesh that out, obviously that will include how we have a number of reporting mechanisms, both to the community, to the prime stakeholders and to council. So we're still working on that, so that sort of process is happening.
That's great, thanks. It will be great to have a good deal of oversight and visibility as we progress each step. And I guess on that, I wanted to ask a question about the environmental issues and specifically climate resilience, actually. I note that in this report there are no environmental issues to consider, but I just wanted to flag at this early stage that I believe that there are environmental issues, particularly with respect to things like street trees and the like, and also obviously climate resilience in terms of, like, we need to be storm surge ready, and we need to be flood ready and stormwater ready and all kinds of things because of the increase in climate related events. So is there any broad commentary you'd like to provide around environmental issues, considering that this report has none listed?
Mr. Ferrier.
In this first rollout of the project, with this work program that we've got for the next 2.5 to 3 years, that will be considered more broadly in some of the, master planning process. In the attachment 2, that describes the broader program of works which are required or envisaged over the whole life of the rolling out the place strategy, and we're certainly very aware of the it's the difficulties in anticipating what things are going to be like in say 20 years' time, and that we it's a hackneyed phrase, but we do need to future-proof the CBD in a way which as best as we can predicts what is needed in the future, and that certainly involves a high degree of sustainability in terms of environmental sustainability and energy use, and getting people to get out of their cars and use public transport and active transport and all those sorts of things. Technology will be a huge factor as we move forward. So all of those issues are accommodated within, I guess, that broader program of works within attachment 2, but we're also cognizant of that as we move forward in the next year or two as well.
That's wonderful. Thanks very much. And if I might start my substantive, please, Mayor, I'm really pleased that we've actually touched on things like renewables, and I mentioned street trees, and also the embracing technology. I'm aware that all of these places should have, for example, free Wi-Fi and recognition of the Internet of Things, and how we should be poised to embrace those kind of technologies which are already here but will progressively become a more permanent part of our lives. So my second question, actually, before I go on, is about land acquisitions. Looking forward to March to May 2021, initial discussions with landowners in regard to Civic Spine proposal. I obviously realise there's not a lot of detail there, but I was hoping for more commentary around whether we anticipate any difficulty, pushback, or whether it's a cordial process.
Mr. Berriott.
That's an open-ended question. We don't know that. We haven't had those conversations with the landowners yet. Clearly, that's a recommendation within the place strategy, so it's been accommodated within the work plan. We're not predicting that we're going to build that civic spine in the next 2 years. Like I said, we'll focus more on the main street reconstruction and things like Partylite Parade and a few other matters. But we are including the initial investigations into the full civic spine development, and we are making some provision for land acquisitions as needed. Again, we're leaving some flexibility in the work program in that regard to see what can be done and allow those decisions to be made as we move forward, rather than trying to make them now without having those conversations.
Fair enough. Thanks very much. So I just wanted to flag before I pass on to the next person how excited I am about various elements of this, and how I fully intend to maintain that level of high level of engagement, particularly with respect to embracing renewable street trees, free Wi-Fi and climate resilience, but also what an exciting opportunity this is for Kingborough. And I'll draw our attention now to the work program over the next 3 years, how it's achievable, and some progress is already being made. But if we turn our attention to the finance, there's $100,000 to reimburse Council for the cost of the place strategy, $800,000 for the redevelopment of the Kingston Bus Transit Centre, $7 million for complementary Council initiatives, and the first instalment of $500,000 has been paid to council, and there's another instalment of $1.5 million to be paid in November 2020, and then another $2 million 1 year later. And with that, we're going to see the implementation of the Kingston Place strategy, the bus interchange, all the work on the Main Street and Partalote Parade. I'm particularly excited about the bike plan, and I look forward to seeing that work progress. And I'm, in a way, I look forward to the fact that because it's being largely done in-house, there will be that extra element of oversight that we'll be able to stay on top of it. And all the other transport projects such as the Whitewater Creek pathway and footpath improvements. So it's a tremendous opportunity, and I'm pleased to see it coming forward to fruition at a good pace. I think there is, as you can read in the report, some significant risk associated with it that we need to be mindful of, but I am very proud to second this motion because I think it signals some of the terrific progress that we're making. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Like Councillor Cordova, I'm really excited about this. I've waited for 32 years for this. I've been working towards it for 32 years, and I hope to see it come to fruition within my lifetime. There you go. I think it's been worth waiting for because... I think it's been worth waiting for because it's been done thoroughly, and we've got the community on board, we've got the state and federal government on board, and we're in a fantastic position now, but it has taken 32 years. And I just hope we're, all of us around the table, will see it come to fruition. Thank you.
Okay. Well, look, I'm very pleased to see the timeline. I was pleasantly surprised by the timeline, Mr. Ferry. I also always almost feel it's a bit ambitious, which I like, though, because I think, you know, if we're ambitious, we even if we fail a little bit, I think the timelines look good. The timeline, I suppose, is the most interesting part to me, and it was more ambitious than I thought we would put. Is there a way that we can communicate? I know that we don't have in-house graphic designers and that sort of thing, but can we communicate that timeline so that people, particularly business community, can see what our ambition is here?
Through you, Mayor. I guess so. I think, I mean, I'm not the right person to do it in and use the technology to produce the display
no,
and everything
not.
Else, but I'm sure there are people within... Certainly not. I'm sure there are people within council that can do that and present it in a way. I think Sarah could probably put something together
yeah.
which is much more presentable and understandable to the community.
I think it's a great report with a lot of detail, but that's the most important bit to me is when we intend to roll these, not only what the projects are, but what our timeline is. I know there's some risk associated with that because we open ourselves up for criticism for not meeting an ambitious timeline, but I think it's worth doing. To sum up, Councillor Street.
Summed up.
Thanks, Councillor Street. The motion is moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Cordova, that Council endorse the work program within Attachment 1 for the Transform Kingston project, this being the first stage of the implementation of the Kingston Place strategy. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion carried unanimously. For the record, Councillor Midgley left the meeting at 8:55pm. Miraculously, she also returned at the same time. Next item, Kingston Park Stormwater Management is Tom Page next, and Councillor Cordova would like to move, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm very pleased to move the Kingston Park Stormwater Management item on the agenda tonight. Essentially, what we're looking at here is the various options that we have available to us to manage the stormwater issues that will emerge and some of the current issues that exist at the Kingston Wetlands and also in the Kingston Park development. As we move forward, the recommendation here is that we're going to delegate some of the authority to the General Manager for further negotiations to take place with the developer Traders in Purple in regard to necessary cost sharing arrangements, and we're also going to endorse the proposed stormwater treatment solution that will treat all of the stormwater emanating from Kingston Park development within the existing Kingston wetlands, as described in this report. And so basically in the report there are three options. One of the options changes the current setup of the wetlands. Another option
keeps it the same. The options have various costs. I'll briefly take us through those, and then I've got some questions, because I'm sure they could be better answered by an expert than myself. The first option was a combined solution for the whole of the Kingston Park and CBD catchment that entailed installing a new GPT, which is the gross pollutant trap, if my memory serves me correctly, before the existing primary pond, and then a new bioretention pond within part of the first wetland, and then further treatment would occur within the rest of the existing wetland system. The second option was to pretty much do the same, except that the new bioretention pond would be located within the Tas Water Overflow Pond, with further treatment then occurring within the existing wetlands. And the final option was about having a separate treatment system for Kingston Park, and this would entail a new bioretention pond to be located in the very northern corner just outside the Tas Water Overflow Pond. And the existing wetland would continue to treat stormwater from the CBD catchment, as is currently the case. They have various different costs, and we've been recommended with a combined solution. So I thought I would ask now for some commentary from Mr. Ferrier about why the selected option is the selected option.
Mr. Ferrier.
Paragraph 4.6 goes through some... Oh, sorry, through you, Mayor. Paragraph 4.6 goes through the advantages and disadvantages of the three options. So it's really a weighing up the pros and cons of what each one offers. The advantage of a combined solution is we feel that that's got the benefits of... as an ongoing... maintenance and cost-saving measure. It's the most efficient option. So we do feel that the and based upon the advice from the stormwater engineers within council, that's certainly the supported option. It's also the supported option from the perspective of the developer, in that it can treat the stormwater the most effectively or most correct way. So it offers more benefits than the other two options. So the second option is really mainly an issue of it involves Tas Water. It involves the issues in negotiating with Tas Water in the use of their part of their pond, and then having to reconstruct that pond and so on. It's got some disadvantages in that regard, and the third option is really, it might be the cheaper and quickest option, but it really doesn't sort of solve some of those long-term issues that we feel have got the advantage of a combined system.
Thank you for that, and I recognise it's quite a complex area, so it's probably hard to be succinct with it. My question now is about in 4.5, each of these options that we've been talking about includes the use of a bioretention system. And a bioretention system has been chosen because it's more efficient and takes up less space than extending the area of the wetlands. So the area of a bioretention system is roughly 1.5% of the subject catchment area, whereas a wetland would need to be 7%, and that's important in limited space. My question is to provide some clarity around that, because I don't quite remember everything we was explained to us in the workshop. Why was increasing the size of the wetland, was it just that it was cost prohibitive, or was it about something else?
Through the chair, through the mayor, we don't have the space. There's not enough room there in the wetlands. I mean, the wetlands are pretty well fully occupied at the moment, so we just literally don't have any room to extend the wetlands as they currently are. We would literally have to use the Tas Water pond, and probably more again. So there's just not enough space.
Thanks very much. One of my final questions is about the Tas Water. It kind of indicates in the report that Tas Water will likely move to compulsory acquire. Can we have more commentary around is this good for us or bad for us? And, I didn't really understand why. What exactly was the impetus for Tas Water to acquire it, and would we mind if they did acquire it?
Mr. Ferrier.
Yeah, through the chair. Tas Water approached us quite some time ago in relation to acquiring the land which is occupied by the overflow pond. Their position is that it should never have been retained by council originally. It should have been transferred across when the pump station was transferred across, and they obtained legal advice to that effect. We've been holding them off in relation to that acquisition for two reasons. One reason is that we thought we may need some of their land for the stormwater solution, and the other reason is that we were hoping that they could actually look at alternatives to an open open overflow pond. I mean, having raw sewerage on the surface is not ideal in an area which is frequented by many people and is at the gateway to Kingston and is across the road from what will be some multi-storey apartment buildings. So, you know, our position, and we stated it quite upfront to Tas Water, was that we just don't see that as being a long-term sustainable scenario, and that they should start to think about other ways of dealing with their overflow from the pump station. They've obviously come back and sort of said, well, you know, their side of the argument, I guess. What we've tried to do is I hold them off for the time being so that we could complete these investigations. So one of the reasons for this particular report is to say to council, well, we have completed these investigations now. We do know what the solution is for the stormwater. We don't need to use the overflow pond, and that councillors should be aware that on that basis we're likely to now get a compulsory acquisition order or something like that from Tas Water, and that council will not be able to resist that. We've had our own legal advice on that to find out that you know, under their legislation they can do that, we don't have any statutory way of resisting that acquisition. I've gone through, there's three different ways that they could acquire it. We could do it in a cooperative way, or they could do it compulsory. It doesn't really matter. So what we've would like to do is go back to Tas Water and say, well, if you are going to acquire it, then can you do it in a way which maximises the landscape benefits of how you do it, which minimises the impact of the wastewater that spills out into that pond? Can you protect the footpath that goes along there, the public way that is used, and we believe that will only be used to a greater extent in the future. And so we're trying to do it in a way which still retains the public use of the area and actually use it as almost like a leverage to get them to improve the look of the pump station building, the fenced compound, the landscape around the pond, and so on. So we do want to do it in a negotiated outcome, which enables them, I guess, to still use the pump station in the area that they currently do, but in a way which meets our needs as well. So that's where the negotiations will be heading, but. Yeah, it's really this report is twofold. It's both to sort of get the combined solution signed off and the acknowledgement that we're going to have some negotiations with Traders in Purple, which are fine because it'll be done in a very quantified sort of way in terms of the cost splitting. But the other part is the Tas Water, which we need to negotiate some good solid outcomes in our favour in that regard. But we have to also acknowledge that. They will be acquiring that land, and from their point of view it is an area which needs to be fenced from the public safety's perspective. It's not, people can get in there, it's a health hazard, particularly when there's wastewater in it, so it does need to be fenced. They've had their own risk assessment done, so that's fair enough, but if they can do it in a way which complements our public use of the area as well, that's what we're trying to achieve.
Thanks very much, and I will conclude my firstly, I admire the elegance of the understatement about raw sewage on the surface as not being ideal. I concur with that, speaking of solid outcomes. And I think that the most important element of this for me is at 4.16, which is that from council's perspective, as has just been alluded to by Mr. Ferrier, from council's perspective there are also concerns that it's a popular walkway along the edge of the pond, the Cottage Road Trail links with Browns Road and Firthside areas to the CBD, and that the general area is likely to have increased recreational potential in the future with connections to Kingston Park and then on to Kingston Beach, and it's the gateway to Kingston, so we can and should do better making it look nicer and maintaining the environmental values that are there. So I see the duality here, that not only do we need a really efficient and effective stormwater management system, but we also need to do something with the gateway to Kingston and maintain the recreational amenity of that area that we currently have. So with that, I commend the report. Thank you.
I'm not sure who was first, so you could... I'm pretty sure it wasn't Councillor Fox, though. I reckon you were third. I think Councillor Westwood, then Councillor Bastone, then Councillor Fox. Is that right?
I think I was next. I just have two quick questions. So just to confirm that option one is also the preferred solution of Traders in Purple?
Mr. Ferrier.
Can you please confirm?
Through the Mayor, yes, that's correct. Okay.
And the second question was, the Department of Health has already provided a stormwater contribution for the health centre. How much was that? And does that come off the $450,000 or is that being used elsewhere? That's in 5.2.
Through the chair, I can't recall the actual amount, the dollar amount. It's actually in our regular Kingston Park financial spreadsheet. You'll see there was a contribution made by... that's their full contribution. That's not the the stormwater component.
I guess I'm just wanting to check that it's roughly proportional to what they should be.
It's a couple of $100,000. I don't know if John... No, you wouldn't remember. It's sort of a component of it. It was a couple of $100,000 anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I just have one question, in two parts, of course. How long ago did we construct the Cottage Road Trail, and did we know then that Tazwater wanted to take over part of the area?
Through the chair, Daniel Smee would remember four years ago the Cottage Trail, and we did not know then that they were going to acquire it. They approached us about 2 years ago. It might not even be that long, it might be more like 18 months ago. Like I say, we've been holding them off until then, until we do these investigations.
Just a question. I think it's a really good outcome, a thorough report, and I totally support it. Just a little technical question. The retention basin, will that allow for variable water levels? Just that it's the... There'd be a constant discharge flow on the outfall, but will there be a mechanism that would hold the water longer if there's a flood, for example?
Yes, through you, Mayor. The pond, I assume you're meaning the first pond, the first pond that is there for storage, that's what that's for, it's a detention basin, so it does... it can fill up and use that to slow the stormwater that passes through the system, but it does keep the water at the same level. Yes, as you questioned. Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, I will look again at the wetlands as the gateway to Kingston, as a memory of tonight's discussion, I think. But in saying that, though, it is great that this does consider the links and the walkways and the potential that it has with the connectivity around the surrounding development. And it's great to see that we are in discussion with Tazwater re the land acquisition and the fence and the landscaping plans. A good friend who's a stormwater engineer actually enjoys going there to have his lunch and spending time there. He says that good natural systems invite the public to engage with it. So that was from an expert in the field. And so he was quite, when I showed him the report, definitely said, to ask some questions in regards to the Tazwater and ensuring their fencing and landscaping plans, and that we are thinking of it more broadly, as well as, I guess, the importance of what we are discussing tonight. So I thought the Mayor might like to know that.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, there's logic behind the proposed treatment solutions in the report, and I'm happy to go along with those, but is either Mr. Ferrier or our engineer able to advise what the ongoing maintenance costs are on all three final options, whether there is a variation or whether they are similar?
Good question. Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, the ongoing maintenance of the combined solution was generally found. I mean, I haven't got the numbers here, but the consultant from Traders in Purple did a costing of the constructions and also a costing of the maintenance as well. And the maintenance costs for the separate solutions was higher. And in fact, with option three, with the smaller trash rack or gross pollutant track, it's actually quite difficult to access as well. So there were some issues there. They weren't the same. The combined solution was the cheaper to maintain, but it was probably more expensive to construct in the first place.
Right, thank you. And my final question is, when the works are going to be undertaken, is there a reason or is there a requirement that we should look at the ponds as to whether they need to be enlarged or deepened?
Sorry, through you, Mayor. That will be part of the development application which gets lodged for the upgrade of the system. That will be fully explained in all the reports that come with that. And the wetlands will not need to be increased in size. Though the whole idea is that the extra work that's being done as part of this proposal will be sufficient for the long-term future of managing stormwater through the whole CBD catchment, not just Kingston Park. When the works are actually constructed, they can be staged. They don't have to be all done at once. And in fact, it may well be that we don't do most of the works for another 3 or 4 years when the actual more development occurs in Kingston Park and so on. So it's something which can be progressively scaled up in our CapEx program as far as the council costs are concerned, and which can be also included in the Kingston Park program for them to pay their way over a number of years as well. So it's not a big expense up front.
Thank you.
I was interested in this not only to resolve some of the issues with stormwater in the CBD, but also in terms of the flow-on impacts to Browns River. I'm assuming that one is actually could potentially assist with water quality at Browns River. Is that something that could happen out of this?
The stormwater engineers would be the best ones to ask the technical questions, but answer the technical questions. But my understanding is what's proposed here will do that. It will improve the current situation. The advice we get from Alexander Aronson here within council is that the current wetlands are not meeting current standards, so some upgrade will be necessary. Like I say, it doesn't have to be done straight away, but it will be needed. So you'd have to assume that following these works, the water that's getting into Browns River will be of a much better quality than it currently is.
Okay. Is this a conversation we've had with the environmental health officers and team in relation to the work they're doing with the Derwent Estuary Program and water quality more generally? Because it seems like this is a great opportunity to not only resolve these problems and allow for the development to go, but also to improve water quality. Is that something we're considering?
We haven't given a lot of thought to the educational, promotional sort of side of it all. Part of the landscaping that we are doing is that we want to have a viewing spot, because we are going to have to raise the levels quite a lot, about 1.5 to 2 metres at one point. So there's an opportunity there to have some sort of interpretation, which will provide some further education in terms of what's actually how this whole system works and what improvements we've made. Certainly John Doole's been part of the background working team which has looked at what we're doing, and John was part of the process which installed the wetlands originally, and has worked in conjunction with the Derwent Estuary Program. I think we've got some funding from them at some stage to do some work there. So yeah, we'd certainly like to include them as part of the, I guess, that more educational side.
Yeah. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
The motion is from Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox, and it's the council as written in the report. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion carried unanimously. Next item is the sales office lease within the community hub. It's 9:25. Anyone need a break? No, good. Next one is, yes, on page 95, recommend a motion on this one. Anyone like to move that recommend a motion? Councillor Fox, looking for a seconder. Councillor Bastone, Councillor Fox.
I think it's a good idea to extend the lease to Traders in Purple for 1 year at the community hub, and I think it is important also, because we're doing this, we just get another market rental determination beforehand. So it's been difficult for them during COVID, where they've been trying to operate, and it's been basically lost income to them, so this might help them, if things improve, to try and make some money out of it. But also, we don't want to compromise our future plans for having a proper cafe there. And but I think in good time, we're not going to manage that anyway between now and then, so I think it's a reasonable suggestion. Thank you.
Councillor Mitchley.
Thank you, Mayor. When I first read this, I thought, yes, this absolutely sounds great that we are extending the lease due to COVID and the playground, not meeting the timeframes and all those sort of matters, and in regards to the relationship, with the great relationship we have with Traders in Purple and the development. But I just, after reading it again this afternoon, I felt like it's a long way away, the 2023 February 2023, and I know the report states as to the reasons why, but I don't know. I just worry about it being a year versus, say, 6 months, and I know we've had those sort of discussions before, but I'm just wondering if staff, through your mayor, could provide some more kind of explanation and a bit of an understanding why we should be cautionary to perhaps not extend it for the year and perhaps only make it for the 6 months. I'm just kind of just wanting to explore that a little bit more. And also, it would be great to see in the future, hopefully, a social enterprise moving into there. And we would like, if that perhaps is on the cards and in the future, which I hope that it is, of course we want something like that to happen when it is really productive and functioning, and that someone who does move in there in the future actually does succeed. But 2023 just to me feels like a little bit too long, and I'm wondering at all if there's any comments further to that.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, the factors that were taken into account in relation to determining a year-long extension of the lease are listed there under 4.3 in the dot points. But the bottom line, I suppose, is that they've effectively lost a year in their lease. What we're doing is we offer them a 2-year lease to start with. By giving them the year extension, we're maintaining that original 2-year lease. So it's really in recognition of the fact that they haven't been able to achieve all they have because of a number of delays, both COVID and through to some extent council. It's an acknowledgement of that. I think a 1-year extension is the fair and reasonable response.
Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
I feel a bit the same about the time period. I'd probably be more comfortable with a 6-month extension. I know that there are businesses out there who are busting to get into that space and set up a cafe. And I guess I just want to make sure that we are maximising what's done with that space particularly after the playground has been completed. I was kind of thinking, well, 6 month disruption due to COVID, 6 month extension in the lease. I guess it's 6 months neither here nor there, but I guess my main concern is that I really want to make sure that we get a good operator into the cafe area.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. It's nearly 2021 and 2023 is only 2 years away and it's flying fast, and even though this year with COVID people are asking where this year has gone, that's how fast the year is going. I'm in support of the staff recommendation for two reasons. One, the main idea behind Traders in Purple is that we need some sales, and we need some sales of Kingston Park, and if that will help and assist those sales, the sooner we get those sales the better. Secondly, as a little coffee shop, it gives it another 12 months to be noticed where it is when the park opens, the playground opens. People will automatically get into the habit of having a coffee there, one would suspect, and on that basis I would suspect that we would get a better rental from the outset if we delay it 12 months. As much as I would like to see that we're in there now, I do believe this is reasonable, and I think we need to work with those that are working with us. And as I said in my opening remarks, the whole idea, of course, is to get some sales and to get on with the next part of it. And I think this is the best way. And as I said, it's almost 2021, so we're talking 2 years, and that's flying. So I'm in perfect, or I'm in total support of the recommendation.
Councillor Bastone.
I support the motion for 12 months extension. It's not just COVID, it's also the playground is going to be nearly 5 months behind schedule if it's not opening till March. And we need, the coffee shop really needs to have the playground working for them. So they're really only getting a two-year time with the playground, so I support the 12 months.
Good to know, the lights on. Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up? Okay, motion is as printed in the agenda. It was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Next item is the financial report, September 2020. Would anyone like to... Yep, Councillor Westwood will move. And looking for a seconder, Councillor Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. There's some interesting things happening in this report. I guess to start off, I should note that we're in a relatively improved financial position, albeit we still have a forecast underlying result of $2 million. I just had a couple of questions. In regards to rates revenue being over by $92,000, it says the general rate's over $61,000. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions around that in terms of why are we getting more rates revenue when we're forecasting people will be having difficulty paying their rates? Are people having difficulty paying their rates, or aren't they? And is this what is this related to? Why are we getting more rates revenue?
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through the chair. Essentially, we record the rates that we charge. So we at this stage we've made no we don't make any reductions, particularly for residential rates. The assumption is that we will collect those rates at some point in the future, whether it be now or potentially the end point is the sale of a property. So we record those rates as we receive, as we charge them. In regards to the commercial rates, we did make an allowance this financial year for potentially up to $500,000 worth of commercial rates not being paid. At this stage, it looks like the number will be well short of that. The actual amount of rates that ratepayers have claimed so far or put in applications for remissions is more like about $20,000 a quarter. So potentially at the upper end, that would be at the moment about $100,000 if it goes on for four or five quarters. So essentially, in regards to your question about why we have a budget, there's two factors at the moment. For our general rate in particular, The SUPs have been well above our expectation for the first two of the 3 months so far this financial year, and they're a bit over $20,000 over budget. The remaining 40 relates to our estimates at the start of the year, and generally we make an estimate about sort of April, and at that point we've got to try and predict whether there's any SUPs in the system. So if there's more SUPs than we expected, in this case 40,000 would represent about 25 to 30 SUPs more than we expected when we put the numbers together.
So do you have any estimate of how much we won't, what the value of the residential rates we may not have by the end of the financial year?
Yeah, through the chair. Look, essentially at this stage, it's a bit hard to determine, but we've got about 30,000 worth of rates that are COVID deferrals, so they're people who have contacted us and asked for a deferral. We've got 76,000 worth of rates that are essentially people that are on paying arrangements, so they've got an arrangement in place. We've got 319,000 worth of unpaid rates that have not made any contact with us. So, 423,000 in total is outstanding. We'll start next month. We will start contacting ratepayers and commencing the interest and penalties regime if they don't contact us to make an arrangement. So that will hopefully bring forward another lot of ratepayers that we can have a discussion with about whether they've got some COVID-related restraints on their ability to pay their rates.
I guess I'm just concerned with the assumption that at this point in time we will be collecting all the rates that have been levied. If we're 319,000 down plus 30,000 deferred, assuming the payment people on payment plans pay as per the plan, at what point is that realised? Is that going to be the last kind of month of the financial year and we have a big hit of 400,000 that hasn't come in and it wasn't reflected in these reports?
Through the chair, in regard to residential rates, we don't write off any of the rates. So basically, our aim is to get people into a paying arrangement and hope that paying arrangement is at least equivalent to their outstanding rates over a period of time. In essence, if that doesn't occur, then we'll support them in whichever way we can until it becomes really clear that they don't have an ability to pay their rates, at which time we bring a report to council, and the end point is the sale of a property. So normally we will support people while they're in their property to try and come up with an arrangement that allows them to stay within their property, but in the end case, if that doesn't occur, then a report comes to council and we have a discussion about the potential sale of the property.
But I guess before that, so if we get to the end of the year and we haven't collected all the rates that we've forecast, I understand that they're attached to the property and we should eventually get them, but how is that reflected in revenue if we haven't actually received the cash?
Through the chair, essentially we still recognise the revenue, so the revenue is recognised because at some point in the future we will collect that revenue.
But we might not collect nearly 400,000 in actual cold hard cash.
Yeah, okay, this financial year, yes. In cash terms, we won't collect it this financial year, or a proportion of it we won't collect, but generally we'll get people into having a paying arrangement and we'll collect it over a period of time.
Okay, thank you. The second question I had kind of builds on what Councillor Bastone asked of a question without notice in regards to employee costs and accrued leave. Is there any plan to address that
Gentleman.
Accrued leave?
Yep, through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Westwood, we do have arrangements in place that are written into the existing enterprise agreement that effectively require any member of staff who reaches a threshold with leave, excess leave, that they must take it. We monitor that very closely, but the threshold is higher than Councillor Bastone's question without notice earlier in the evening.
No, the lights are on, in which case the motion was that Council endorses the attached financial report at 31 September 2020. Moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried unanimously. We move to the Mackenzie Road Public Open Space Connection on page 157. We recommend a motion on page 159. Looking for a mover, Councillor Westwood. Looking for a seconder. Seconded by Councillor Wass. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I note that as of September we had $909,913 in the Public Open Space Fund. It seems appropriate that $5,000 of this would be allocated to undertake drainage works on a newly acquired section of trail in Leslievale. My question around that is, it says predominantly for horse riders and walkers. I'm assuming there are no dogs there.
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, the track could be used for dogs. Our policy obviously doesn't cover new tracks, but the default position would be dogs would be required to be on a lead at all times.
So, sorry, is that what it will be, dogs on lead?
Until such time as we endorse our new dog management policy, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Now the lights are on. In that case, the motion is that Council approves the allocation of $5,000 from the Public Open Space Fund to undertake drainage works on the newly acquired section of trail in Leslievale, moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motions carried unanimously. We move on to the Kingborough Ratepayers Association submission. So on page 160, with a recommendation on page 163, Councillor Reet would like to move. Looking for a seconder.
I'd like to move it, but I'd like to move an amended motion. I wanted to add
just
something.
Just in normal practice, I've just checked if no one wants to move the actual recommended motion.
I'm moving it, but I wanted to add a part D to it.
Let's hear part D.
The part D would be just, well, actually, now that I'm looking at it, no, it doesn't work doing it like that.
Just move there as printed?
No, because I don't agree with the recommendation.
Okay. Well, who would like to move the motion? Kick us off.
Can I move an alternative?
Yeah, what do you want to do?
It would be that Council resolved to be the same as A, but B would be replaced with that Council hold a workshop to discuss the issues raised by the Kingborough Ratepayers Association in this report. And C goes. No, I'm suggesting, I think, just by way of explanation, it's just that I think that this fits in with some of the customer service policy issues that we've been talking about, and I think it's appropriate to have an internal discussion.
It's K-R-P-A. I think. No.
Yeah. A-I.
A-I.
K-R-A-I.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Would anyone like to second the motion? Councillor Westwood. Councillor Reed.
Thank you. I won't speak for too long, but I think that we've already passed a unanimous motion earlier this evening, it seems like many hours ago now, to have a new framework for how we deal with complaints. I think the thing that concerns me is that we have the Ratepayers Association have tried to get this matter looked at by the audit panel, and I understand that it, you know, didn't seem to fit within the ballywick, if you like, of the audit panel. They've then taken some advice, and that advice suggested that they should bring it to the broader council, and I don't feel that the response that is contained in this report is adequate. I think it's very dismissive of some of the issues, and I think it's worthy of a discussion at a workshop so that as a group of councillors we can fully understand the issues that they are raising by looking at them and looking at what the relationship might be between some of these issues and what we could work into the new complaints framework that we passed earlier tonight. So I think that we've got that the association is a major stakeholder of council. They are putting forward some suggestions. I don't feel that we've given them adequate consideration in this report, and so I would really like the opportunity to have a discussion as a group and with staff on how we can move this issue forward.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. That seems like an appropriate response to me. It probably thrashing out some of these issues in a workshop would be productive, especially in light of the notice of motion that Councillor Reid put forth. I think there's been some confusion around the role of the audit panel. I'm comfortable that the audit panel is doing its job properly, and I do have confidence that the audit panel is providing an independent oversight of current council practices. I'm very keen to participate in the upcoming risk management workshop. So I feel there's a bit of a disconnect between the community and, on my own behalf, my risk appetite in regards to compliance. And I think that would be worth having more of a discussion. So I guess having two discussions would be a worthwhile use of time.
No lights on at this stage. I think the report that the ratepayers brought to us is worthy of discussion, and it involved a lot of work, and we do appreciate that they take the time to do it. I don't agree with all the recommendations, but I do think that they're all worthy of response, and worthy of a workshop. I think Councillor Reid's motion is a good one, and happy to participate in that, particularly around the other things we're doing. To Councillor Reid, sum up. Okay, Council resolves to A, note the officers' responses to the Kimber Ratepayers Association submission, B, hold a workshop to discuss the issues raised by the KRAI in their submission, and thank the association for their submission. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion carried unanimously. Last one is the petition on unisex bathrooms, recommendation 165. Who'd like to move or second that? Councillor Fox, second by Councillor Reid. Councillor Fox.
Well, it's interesting to see that we're moving in this direction, and we're making substantial progress on having unisex bathrooms, but of course it takes a lot of time to go through all the toilets in the community, but we're getting there, and that is our philosophy, and it's good to see that Council's doing this. Thank you.
Yeah. Councillor Reid.
Look, I just wanted to add that I thought what was missing in the response to this petition was just to let the petitioners know that we're not responsible for bathrooms and toilets in schools, and that perhaps, you know, that their comments should be directed towards some schools. I do know that for some of our more recent schools that they are working towards gender-neutral toilets in some of them. I believe there are some at Kingston High School from memory. But obviously in the older ones, it is a major capital works issue. But I just thought it was worth mentioning because I gather that the petitioners believe that we have a responsibility for school toilets, which we've got enough of our own. but it's certainly an issue that would be good if the Education Department could look at it.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
It's too late tonight.
It is late. Yes, I also agree with Councillor Rita in regards to that sentiment that, you know, as we know, toilets are not under council's jurisdiction, and also it would be good perhaps to provide them with, maybe if council staff do know who they can actually approach in Dowie, to raise that, and also just to note as well, there are a number of public toilets that are owned by shopping centres and things like that that also do not fall under council's area, so it would be good perhaps to let them know, because it does, it's quite broad, schools and public facilities too, so perhaps as well adding to that to let them know that, yeah, there are toilets that we control and there are schools and there are other places in shopping centres and that sort of a thing that we can't do. But yeah, thanks to the people who organised the petition. I hope that they are satisfied with that recommendation.
Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up?
No, I think that adds to the motion, and I think it's important that we do that. Thank you.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Reid. It reads that the organiser of the petition titled Unisex Bathrooms for Schools and Public Facilities be advised that Council has made substantial progress towards the provision of unisex bathroom facilities and will continue to do so as part of the implementation of the Kingborough Public Toilet Strategy. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against... Motion is carried unanimously. Confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. I'm really struggling here. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against. Motion carried unanimously. Open session of Council is adjourned at 9:51 p.m. Good night all, if you're still listening.